Okay, if you've been keeping an eye on the market lately, you probably felt it, right? That sense of excitement, maybe even a bit of exuberance.
Afternoon.
We're hitting fresh all-time highs, and well, it makes you ask, what's really driving this thing? So today, we're going to take a deep dive into some pretty fascinating insights about where the markets are right now. Our main source here is a recent newsletter from Lance Roberts. It's dated July 19th, 2025, and it's called Company Buybacks Are Surging. And it offers a really, nuanced tactical view on the current situation.
Yeah, and what's fascinating, I think, is how this analysis blends the technical charts, the indicators, with the bigger picture fundamental shifts that kind of gives you the whole picture of what to watch out for. You know, especially when the headlines are screaming one thing, but maybe the data is whispering something else.
Exactly.
So our mission today for you listening is really to pull out those key nuggets of knowledge from this analysis, help you understand not just what's happening broadly, but well, why it matters for your own financial thinking.
Right. So let's dive right in. The S&P 500 index, it is at fresh all-time highs, no doubt about it. And a lot of that push seems to be coming from some strong early earnings reports. We're seeing it in sectors like consumer staples, airlines, semiconductors too.
Yeah, on the surface, it looks pretty bullish.
It does.
But the outlook the source really describes is more cautiously constructive, at least for the near term. So yes, there's that bullish momentum, definitely, but the market now seems to demand more tactical positioning,
Meaning.
meaning you can't just, passively ride this wave anymore. You need to be a bit more strategic. The analysis points towards these rotational opportunities. So how these positive earnings might actually start shifting the focus away from maybe the big leaders everyone's crowded into
Okay.
and towards what they call under-owned sectors. Think about financials, industrials, maybe some cyclicals that are still trading below their relative highs, areas that haven't quite caught up to the main rally yet.
Gotcha. So looking for value where maybe others aren't focused right now. And the initial advice from the source is pretty straightforward on this. Maybe think about trimming profits in spots that have gotten really stretched, really overextended, maybe raising a bit of cash, like 5 to 10% allocation, and tightening up those stop loss orders, especially on the high beta trades. And just for clarity, high beta, those are the more volatile, sort of higher risk positions that tend to move more dramatically with the market, up or down.
Yeah, amplify the swings.
Exactly. So the big message here is tactical flexibility. That's key.
Absolutely.
But okay, beyond the earnings headlines, what about the market's own mechanics? The technicals, what are they telling us? I mean, the S&P 500 index is, what, almost 10% above its 50-day moving average and nearly 9% above the 200-day. That's quite a gap.
It absolutely is. And when you see the S&P trading that far above its key moving averages, plus you look at indicators like the RSI, the Relative Strength Index, or the MACD, and they're showing these really extreme readings, well, it paints a picture of intense exuberance, almost euphoria, maybe. And history kind of tells us these are the moments when you really need to be cautious.
Okay.
What's also starting to pop up is something called negative divergence.
Explain that a bit.
So imagine like the market price is still trying to push higher, maybe making marginal new highs,
Right.
but the underlying strength, the momentum indicators, the RSI, they're actually making lower highs. They're not confirming the price move.
So the engine isn't keeping up with the speed, sort of.
Exactly. It's like the engine sputtering, even though the car's still inching uphill. And historically, these negative divergences, they often tend to show up before short-term corrections. So definitely something to keep an eye on.
Interesting. And speaking of technicals, there's been a lot of talk about the Nasdaq's Golden Cross. For anyone not familiar, a Golden Cross happens when that shorter-term 50-day moving average crosses up and over the longer-term 200-day moving average. It's generally seen as a pretty bullish signal, right? Like the short-term trend is overpowering the long-term one in a positive way.
That's the textbook definition,
And this is significant because it's the fourth time we've seen this on the Nasdaq since 2018. We had it in 2019, 2020, 2023. And each of those times, it did lead to pretty strong rallies in stocks. This latest one happened back in late June 2025, and it definitely seemed to, reignite that bullish feeling.
It did, however, and this is a really important however,
Right.
investors have to ask themselves, how much weight should we really put on a technical signal like that when the underlying fundamentals, the economic backdrop, looks so different this time around?
Good point. what's different?
Well, think about those previous rallies after a golden cross. We often had, you know, strong earnings growth already in place. Interest rates were generally lower. Monetary policy was pretty easy. The Fed was helping out.
Right. Lots of tailwinds.
Exactly. This cycle, it feels different. Inflation is still sticky, isn't it? Interest rates are way up here, elevated. And global economic growth, well, it's facing quite a few headwinds. So these challenges make you wonder, is this rally we're seeing driven more by that technical momentum, the sentiment shift from the Golden Cross, rather than actual improvements in the real economy?
So the signal might be flashing, but the foundation isn't as solid as before.
That's the concern. While the Golden Cross definitely reflects that shift in market mood and trend, it's absolutely no guarantee of future gains. I mean, history shows major market tops can actually form after signals like this, especially if they happen when the broader economic picture is getting worse, not better.
That is a critical distinction. Really highlights that tension, doesn't it? Between the chart saying go and the economy saying maybe wait a minute.
Precisely.
So let's pivot then. What are the key things coming up? The catalysts on the horizon, the source calls this week in July, pivotal. What's driving that?
Absolutely. Well, the main thing is earnings season. It's really kicking into high gear. Mm-hmm. We're expecting reports from some big household names, right? Across consumer tech, industrials, think Coca-Cola, Verizon, Alphabet, Tesla, Intel, General Motors, big players.
Okay.
And there are really two ways this could go. If we get strong reports across the board, that could help what's called market breadth.
Meaning more stocks participating, not just the big tech name.
Exactly. More companies, more sectors joining the party. That's generally seen as healthier. But on the flip side, if we get any high-profile misses, especially from those huge mega-cap tech stocks everyone's watching, well, that could easily trigger some sector rotation. Money moving out of tech, maybe into other areas.
Okay, so earnings are huge. What else?
Fed policy signals, of course, still a major focus. The market seems pretty split on whether the Fed will actually cut rates at the next meeting.
Yeah, I saw Governor Waller's recent comments added some fuel to that fire, didn't they?
They did. And you just get these mixed views from within the Fed itself, which means that policy uncertainty is still really high.
So more Fed watching.
Definitely. We've got several Fed speakers scheduled, and Chairman Powell is making public remarks, too. Those could give us really critical clues about how the Fed's thinking is evolving on potential rate cuts.
Gotcha. Anything else major this week?
We also get the U.S. leading economic indicators. That's a broad gauge of economic momentum, so it's pretty important for judging whether that soft landing story for the economy still holds water.
Right. The idea that the economy slows down but doesn't crash.
Exactly. So overall, the source is clear. Risk levels are still elevated. Even with some supportive earnings, maybe, and disinflation helping a bit, you've got these stretched valuations we talked about, technical signs of exhaustion. It all kind of argues for maybe being a bit more defensive, positioning-wise, in the short term.
Okay. So with all these kind of conflicting signals, maybe the biggest elephant in the room, the factor really propping things up, is this surge in company buybacks.
Mm-hmm.
This really feels like a central theme in the source material, doesn't it?
It absolutely is. And just to give some context here, Q2 earnings estimates, they've actually been coming down. They started around $234 per share back in March 2024. But by mid-June, they dropped to $220 per share. That's a $14 cut.
Wow. Why the drop?
Well, part of it, the source says, was due to initial tariff concerns. People worried about the impact on profits. And FactSet data backs this up. Q2 2025 estimated earnings are coming in lower than expected. Actually, the year-over-year growth rate is forecast at just 4.0%. That's the lowest since the end of 2023.
Okay.
And analysts have lowered their estimates for Q2 by about 4.1%. That's a bigger cut than the average we've seen over the last 5 or 10 years.
And I saw Goldman Sachs seems to agree. They're also expecting only about 4% earnings growth for Q2. And they specifically mentioned that most of that growth is coming from just a handful of stocks.
Yeah.
Hinting it's the Magnificent Seven.
Right. Same old story in some ways. But here's where that tariff narrative gets kind of interesting. Initially, a lot of economists thought U.S. consumers would end up bearing most of the cost, maybe 70%. But recent inflation reports maybe suggest that's not quite how it played out. The source actually notes the conclusion is simple. Foreigners are paying the tariffs, just as Trump said they would. Now we're just reporting what the source says here.
Right, just relaying the analysis.
But the implication is that the economic burden might have shifted, meaning maybe U.S. corporate profits didn't take the hit initially feared from those tariffs.
Okay, so that's a subtle point. But it might explain why we haven't seen maybe more profit warnings?
Potentially, yes. But despite those lowered overall estimates and the tariff nuances, here's the really crucial piece, the thing providing massive support.
The buybacks.
Exactly. Company buybacks. Announced buybacks, actual buybacks executed.
Oh.
They have just surged in the last couple of months. They've hit a new record, apparently. And the expectation is they could exceed $1 trillion by the end of 2025.
$1 trillion.
Yeah.
That's a huge amount of buying pressure.
It's enormous. That surge in buyback activity makes corporations a significant market participant. I mean, think about it. Companies are buying their own stock back for various reasons.
Yeah, like returning cash to shareholders, boosting earnings per share numbers.
Right. Or maybe signaling management thinks the stock's cheap, whatever the reason, that buying actively props up the market, especially when it's happening at this scale.
Okay, but is it sustainable? That's the big question, isn't it?
That is the multi-trillion dollar question, maybe. Because you have these other factors. Consumer delinquency rates are ticking up. Interest rates are still high. Getting credit is tougher for consumers. All that creates a significant risk of future downward revisions for actual earnings, even if analysts are still kind of optimistic looking out to 2026.
So the buybacks are like creating an artificial floor under the market right now.
That's a good way to put it. It's providing support that might not be fully justified by the underlying business fundamentals alone. The real question is, yeah, what happens if that buyback flow slows down? Or if corporate health really does start to deteriorate more broadly?
Okay. So given all these mixed signals, the highs, the technical warnings, the earnings questions, the huge buyback support, what does the source suggest in terms of practical portfolio tactics?
Mm.
It warns about this building exuberance, right?
Mm.
Saying that when it gets extreme, it can actually be a contrarian signal, meaning time to be cautious.
Exactly. The core advice is to rebalance risk accordingly, because momentum, you know, it's powerful and hard to stop, but it tends to reverse really quickly and sometimes violently when it finally does turn.
So what specific adjustments are suggested?
Well, a few things. Maybe reducing bond duration, slightly leaning more towards shorter-term bonds. The thinking is they might benefit more if or when the Fed eventually does cut rates. Also, maybe increasing mortgage-related holdings for similar reasons. And, as we mentioned, taking some profits off the table in those holdings that look egregiously overbought.
Right. Trim the winners that have run too far too fast.
Yeah. The core idea for equities is maintain core equity allocation. So don't bail out completely.
Okay.
But maybe trim exposure in extended sectors like large cap tech potentially.
Yep.
And focus more on high quality, fundamentally sound companies that still have strong earnings momentum. Quality over just chasing hype.
Makes sense. And what about tactical moves?
They get pretty specific. Suggest maybe raise cash levels slightly, just have a bit more dry powder. Consider adding some volatility protection, maybe through short-term treasury bonds.
Okay.
And while staying selectively long, things like AI and tech leadership, because you don't want to miss out entirely if it keeps running, maybe hedge those tail risks. One suggestion is adding selective hedges using short-term puts on the S&P 500, SPY. Basically, buying a little insurance against a near-term market pullback. It's all about being nimble, really.
Okay. And do they suggest a specific allocation mix?
Yeah, they offered a guideline, maybe 60% in core equity, tilted towards those momentum names. Then 20-25% in tactical positions that could be the short-duration bonds, maybe some defensive value stocks or those hedges we talked about.
MRF.
And the remaining 10-15% in defensive assets, basically cash or cash equivalents.
Got it. So flexible, opportunistic, but disciplined, protecting capital.
That's the theme. Stay flexible. Be ready to be opportunistic, but disciplined. You know, maybe buy pullbacks if they happen in strong areas, but use those edges. Capital preservation, the source stresses should really be front of mind right now, right alongside trying to position tactically as the market works through earnings and these shifting economic narratives.
Okay, let's shift focus slightly to the market and sector X-ray part of the analysis. It notes that some recent, maybe sloppy trading has actually reduced some of the most extreme overbought conditions.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of air came out.
A little bit, yeah. But despite that, technology, consumer discretionary, and the overall S&P 500 index itself, they still remain very overbought.
Still stretched.
But conversely, you look at sectors like healthcare, energy, communications, even bonds, they're now looking oversold. And that disparity really suggests that a sector rotation is likely at some point over the next month or so.
Explain that risk-off rotation idea again. What does that look like?
So a risk-off rotation from offensive to defensive sectors is basically when investors get nervous. They start selling the stocks that do well when the economy is booming. Those are the offensive sectors like tech, industrials, consumer discretionary.
It's cyclical stuff.
Right, the cyclical stuff. And they move that money into more stable, less economically sensitive areas, the defensive sectors. Think healthcare, utilities, consumer staples, things people need regardless of the economy. They tend to hold up better during downturns or uncertainty.
Okay. And the overall technical composite score in the analysis, where does that stand?
It's at 89.01. The reading is very overbought, risk rising. It strongly suggests pullbacks are likely. That's not just a number. It's a pretty loud warning signal from a composite of indicators.
Wow. Okay. And what about the fear greed index?
Also flashing warnings. It's at 76.40, which falls into the extreme greed risk warning category.
Extreme greed.
Yeah. It just reinforces that message. Risk management should probably be more important right now than just chasing more gains. You know that old saying, be fearful when others are greedy? This index is basically screaming that others are pretty greedy right now.
Good context.
Yeah.
And looking at relative sector performance.
Yeah. Recently, healthcare, materials, and energy have been underperforming. Meanwhile, money was chasing transports, industrials, and technology. So with those leaders getting more and more overbought, the expectation is we'll eventually see some kind of correction there and likely a rotation back towards those more defensive, maybe oversold sectors.
And it specifically flags healthcare as interesting.
It does. Calls it the most oversold sector right now. Mentions specific names like UNH, ISRG, ABT as examples. It's flagged as an interesting opportunity if you're looking for defensive plays, assuming the market mood does start to shift that way.
Okay, so summing up this section, the risk of a really deep correction might be fading a bit because more sectors are showing bullish signals on a weekly basis.
Right. The weekly moving average crossovers are improving 15 sectors now compared to just 7 a few weeks ago, which is a positive sign for underlying breadth.
But that doesn't mean we're immune to smaller pullbacks, maybe 3-5% corrections.
Not at all. Those are still definitely possible, maybe even likely given the overbought readings. And that idea of a risk-off rotation, moving from offensive to defensive stocks, well, it really seems to be building steam based on these sector signals.
Okay, so let's try and tie this all together. What does this actually mean for you, the listener? We've painted this picture, right? A market hitting all-time highs. That's exciting. But it seems largely supported by these huge company buybacks.
Yeah.
And some bullish technical signals, like that NASDAQ golden cross.
Mm-hmm.
Yet at the same time, it's just riddled with these warning signs from other indicators, overbought conditions, those negative divergences we talked about. Not to mention the underlying worries about sticky inflation and maybe consumer credit starting to strain.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really complex mixed picture.
It really is. And if we connect this back to the bigger picture, I think it's crystal clear that you really need to understand how all these pieces interact. The technical signals, yeah, they matter, but so does corporate behavior, like these buybacks. And crucially, so does the health of the broader economy. Navigating today's markets means appreciating that complexity. Momentum is powerful, buybacks are powerful. But at the end of the day, for this rally to be really sustainable, you probably need to see those fundamental improvements, and those still feel pretty uncertain right now.
So critical thinking is key. Balancing the exciting headlines with what the underlying data is actually saying.
Absolutely essential.
Okay. So we'll leave you with maybe one final thought to chew on. Something to consider as you navigate all this. Think about how your own perceptions of market strength are being shaped right now. Is it mostly by those headlines screaming all-time highs?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you also looking at those deeper, maybe more nuanced data points, the ones that are suggesting a bit more caution might be warranted? And how might understanding these different layers, the technicals, the fundamentals, the buybacks, how might that change your own approach as you evaluate risk and opportunity in your own financial landscape? Something to think about.